Time now for Connecting the Diocese. Connecting the Diocese is a production of the Diocese of La Crosse. Here's host Jack Socha.
Hey, thanks for joining us on Connecting the Diocese. Big news coming out of Poland from this past Sunday. A Polish family of seven, the Olmos, have been beatified. They were a family during World War II that sheltered a Jewish family in Poland in their home for 18 months until they were discovered by the Nazis in 1944. In punishment for their actions, the Nazis shot all members of the family, including the mother who was carrying her seventh child. The shock and trauma of the shots caused the baby to be born prematurely and died, and was therefore considered by the Vatican to be the seventh martyr. But a remarkable story of love and caring and taking great risk, ending the possibility of dying, which of course they did. More about this family at the Catholic News Service, and of course also various regular media have picked up this quite remarkable story. And a great story of this love of this Catholic family for their Jewish neighbors at a time when anti-Semitism is raising its ugly head in many parts of Europe. We'll be hearing a lot more about other families, farm families, when we talk to Deacon Bob Zitlow, coming up right after this on Connecting the Diocese. Here's a message from Bishop William P. Callahan, Bishop of the Diocese of La Crosse.
Lord Jesus, it was you who called the apostles to a intimate and strong bond with you. It is from them and through them that you established the church. It is from them and through them that you have established one priesthood, founded in the Eucharist, supported and strengthened in the fraternity of priests, brothers. We ask that you continue to pour forth your blessings upon the priests of this diocese, continue to strengthen them and support them. Help each of us as your priests to be faithful and kind, to be open and true to the teachings of your name in your church, and to be generous and loving stewards of your grace and your mercy. We ask this through Christ our Lord. Amen.
Coming up in this show, you'll be hearing from Deacon Bob Zitlow, a little bit of his story. You'll be hearing about Father Joseph Walieski, who went down to Peru and is now considered a good candidate for sainthood from the Diocese of La Crosse. Along with our hardworking lay people and our wonderful volunteers, there's quite a crew of people who, at one point in their life, said, you know, I'm feeling this tug towards a vocation to the priesthood, or I'm feeling a tug towards becoming a deacon. I'm considering a tug to become a religious, and I can't shake it off. As I believe C.S. Lewis once wrote, the hound of heaven is after you. If that is you, the Diocese of La Crosse Vocations Department is the place to call to just come talk to them. They have some marvelous programs, pre-seminary and all kinds of different things to give you a much better idea of what it is like to be totally involved in the church. No obligation, no pressure. Just start by going to diolc.org, the diocesan website, and look up the tab for vocations. And after you read a bit more about it, just give them a call. I think you'll be very, very pleased.
Catholic news and interviews. This is Connecting the Diocese.
Well, as promised, we got some special guests with a lot of information I have been looking forward to hearing from. First, I've known him on and off since before he was a deacon, Deacon Bob Zitlow. Deacon, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Jack.
It has been a while since I have seen you, pre-pandemic at least, if not more so.
Oh, yes.
And how long have you been a deacon now?
I've been a deacon 11 years.
What was
remember
the...
how I sold advertising 4 years ago?
Oh, I remember you were doing radio ads. Yeah.
And I got connecting with the bishop.
Yeah.
On the regular station.
Who would have believed, though, that 11 years later we would still be doing this, number one. And number two, that now because of the internet, not only can you hear us in the Diocese of La Crosse, you know, we have Spirit Radio giving us more coverage outside of Wisconsin. And also you can go to places like Amazon and type in Connecting the Diocese and up pops the show, not live, but pre-recorded. Who would have thunk it? Who would have thunk I could work from home during the pandemic talking to a computer and my guest could be talking to another to me from another computer, you know, miles away. But one thing is the same. We still spend time talking about all the good stuff that goes on in this diocese. 15,000 square miles, predominantly rural, for those of you who do not know that. The joke, of course, as I've said many times, whenever any bishop is here, whether it was Bishop Lestecki, Bishop Callahan, how long does it take to get to fill in the town? About 2 hours.
Yes.
Now, and please sign in. And you are?
I'm Anne Marie Elwing. I'm a veterinarian and live near DeSoto.
Okay, live near DeSoto. And you say a veterinarian?
I am.
Oh, very
large
nice.
Animal.
Very large, big time animals.
Cows
okay.
mainly, yes.
Yes, yeah, not our little cat guys.
No.
No, too bad. I just need to get some stuff to put on the back of one of ones for ear mites. So you haven't got any with you, do you?
I don't.
The big animals, that's a big deal. That's a lot of work.
It's very pleasurable, though. When I was just describing it to you, I had a visit from Dairy Farmers of America this morning, and I urged them to drive up and down the Mississippi. And I said, that's one thing. It might be snowy and cold here, and we do live in rural Wisconsin, but it's just beautiful.
I was born in Newark, New Jersey. When I was a young boy, prior to fifth grade, I could look out the back window and see the Empire State Building. And I had never seen a cow. Now, 40 years ago, my wife and I got married. My wife is from the Owen Withy area near Marshfield. And through the grace of God, my second radio job was in Marshfield. And so I got to live in the part of the world where her parents lived who were dairy farmers. The humble, humble family farm. And I was so pleased to be able to live in their part of the world. And so it isn't an abstract thing, you know, which is nice. So we're talking about rural life. Most people listening in the diocese are, if not in a rural area, real close to one, because it's pretty hard to get away from one unless you're in the middle of downtown Milwaukee or something like that. You know, this is a vast area. Marathon County, the joke was more cows than people. You know, we've got these towns named like Colby, as in cheese. Yeah. Arpin strip cheese is known a lot. There's all this stuff going on everywhere. And at the same time, farmers, I have been around with since the farmers have been struggling with milk prices and all this stuff. And I remember very clearly my wife's Finnish bachelor uncle, Voito, tremendous guy. The day he was sitting working on his taxes to see how much money he actually made that year. And it was like, it's got to be more than this. You know, it's tough.
It's tough.
It is tough. I mean, I'm sure that the people who drive by and they see the harvest stores sitting there and they see all the equipment and all this stuff. And it looks like, oh, these guys must be making tons of money. And no, it's a struggle. And then here we have this heat wave. Everything was going pretty good. You know, we got some good melt off from the winter. And then boom, a heat dome. I don't know much about agriculture, but I was, you know, hearing that, you know, when the spinach leaves turn their light side up to try to keep the heat off, that means they're pretty smart spinach leaves. But also, it means that things are not doing too good. And there is some question as to how much corn there is inside the corn right now. So anyway, with that in mind, you also are on a variety of committees. You seem like you're pretty tapped into the whole world of ag. What are the things you do?
One of the pleasurable things that I also participate in is the Vernon County Agriculture Women's Group. Whatever your link is to food or agriculture or in some type of bookkeeping, anything, we meet every 6 weeks. We enjoy each other's company. We learn from each other, and we travel around Vernon County just seeing other people's businesses and understanding their venues of work and play.
That's great. What else do you do?
Of course, I practice full-time as a veterinarian.
Yes, that keeps you busy.
And also, I have twin sons. Mm-hmm. One is on the farm with us. We milk a large number of cows, and we're just building a new rotary parlor. So that's kind of exciting in the heat. And I also serve on the St. Charles of Genoa. I am the head of the women's group there. We started that in 2014 with Father Dine. I'm still going strong, and we're small but mighty. We do a lot of great things. I also work with Bishop Callahan on the foundation board and enjoy and learn from that as well.
It is kind of funny, isn't it, that he's a guy from the south side of Chicago and had never been to La Crosse, let alone to this part of the world. And it was kind of like a learning experience, but I think he has learned to really love it here.
It was really crazy. I was visiting the Basilica of St. Josephat, and it said Father Bill on a poster there, and I kept moving down the line of the history, and I was telling my cousin, this just can't be, and I took one look at his young face and said, that is the bishop. So I was telling him that story. I was so proud that, hey, I get to sit next to you, and you did a wonderful, beautiful thing in Milwaukee.
He seemed to be very pleased with all that. And yet, at the same time, he's been here now, you know, quite a few years, and he's just really learned to settle into it and go, you know, this is really pretty nice. And Bob, what is your relationship to the Rural Life Committee and the general rural scene here now?
Well, I grew up on the farm.
And a couple years ago, about 4 years ago, they were looking for a replacement for the liaison to the bishop. And they put a note out, and I saw the note, and it came calling to me that I should step forward and be the liaison to the bishop. So I'm the person who meets with the committee and goes back to the bishop and gives him what's going on, and he tells me what his thoughts are, and I share them with the committee as well.
So, where was your farm?
Out in Holman, right off, well, a lot of people know where Shufflebine's Orchard was. We were right next to Shufflebine's Orchard, so.
We have had so many interesting stories, and we're going to get to a couple of the major projects that are continuing, you know, Project Milk, Project Seed, all these things, which I always was floored when I heard about them. You know, this is, as the joke I say often here, probably too often, doing the show every week helps keep me sane. Because in a kind of insane world, you see all the good that's going on. I mean, in big ways, in little ways, you know, everything that's happening, it's amazing that we see Catholic Charities doing this and Catholic Charities doing that and helping out refugees. And, you know, and then here you guys are working with the farmers and trying to keep the family farm intact because of the pressure to somehow get absorbed. You know, like the old Star Trek, the Borg, you will be absorbed. And there's nothing quite like the family farm, the culture of the family farm. That and the quality that's going on, that goes on. There seems to be more care. The idea that the farmer knows the name of all of his cows. You know, we've got some signs in our garage. Voito passed away a number of years ago, but we have his big metal AMPI sign in our garage, and also we have these 11x14 kind of hard plastic slates where you write the name of the cow. And we've got those, and I want to spray them with some kind of thing to fix them so we can hang them up in the house, because it's just delightful to see it, you know, delightful to see it. I just, like I say, that getting to know this family, this farm family, has been revolutionary for me, because I would never have known this stuff. You know, I thought milk, a little box, you get it in school, you know, that's about it. That's where it comes from, I don't know. But we have an event coming up. And real quick, we're talking about September 13th?
Correct.
I got that date.
Wednesday.
Wednesday, September 13th. Every year, there's a special event at a local farm family. And I promoted this the past couple of weeks, but this one will be in Marshfield.
Correct.
And it will be on a farm in Marshfield. And you can mention the name of the farm if you like.
Ken and Jolene Hyman.
Okay. And they're on, what was the highway?
Highway 10.
Highway 10. These are numbers I remember. I remember Highway 13 going to work. But and also sliding off the road a couple of times in the ice. This is an opportunity, especially for those of you who have kids, who have, like me, you know, never seen an animal bigger than I was, you know, and maybe a dog. That was about it, you know. To come onto the farm and see not only the machinery, but the organization. And then usually all the other local church groups pitch in to put out a special meal. And occasionally the kids will make little decorations to put up. And the bishop will be there doing this mass in one of the farm buildings, which has been scrupulously made nice. And he loves it. He absolutely loves it. But it's also a chance to take a tour, to kind of see what's going on, to talk to the different groups that are there. And what time is this going to start?
The Mass will start at 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock in Marshfield, and then it'll go, there'll be some things in the afternoon that'll go for a while. And it's a big community thing.
Yes.
And it's just lovely. But again, if you had some kids, you know, little kids, especially those who haven't been on a farm, you know, they buy little toy tractors, and so you can get to see the real thing. And for them, this could be a once-in-a-lifetime event for them to just go, wow, look at all this stuff. I can actually sit in the seat of this tractor or whatever I'm doing, you know. It's quite good. And the family has been doing this, I think, was it a 100-year family that I hear, or am I dreaming that up?
I haven't heard the total.
I heard it was one of these long-term family farms, you know. Well, even the one my in-laws were on went back to, way back, you know, they were originally Finnish iron rangers and stuff like that, working in the mines. And, you know, some of them wanted to save money to buy a farm, so they took the most dangerous job, setting the dynamite in the mines, to make the extra few cents an hour. And then they bought a piece of property, and then they bought a little bit more, and then they got rid of that and bought something else better, and pretty soon they had a nice piece of property. It's a classic American success story. But nothing to brag about, you know, just nice, nice stuff. How long have you had your farm now?
Oh, that was my husband's family's farm. Mm-hmm. They came there in 1961. 16 children in their family, and so everybody had a part to play. And actually, it's the original farm from Dr. Christian Christensen, who started Gunderson Lutheran Hospital with Adolf Gunderson.
Ah, okay.
So a lot of history.
Yeah, and you are still actively working on it every single day.
Oh, yes, every day.
Oh, I bet you that's fun. And I'm sure you also get calls on Monday mornings to the vet's office going, this weekend...
Or Sunday night.
Stuff like that going on. Because the whole world of making milk is not the same as it used to be. I mean, they used to put milk in ice to keep it cool. And you guys have all this machinery, and you have to keep checking the bacteria count and all the stuff.
That technology is amazing.
Amazing, yeah, yes. Exactly. At the same time, there's pressure because the large commercial things can just produce more milk. And then you got to find the company who will come and collect your milk.
You know, what the unique thing yet, though, is in family farms, that there's only 2% that are corporate. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. 98% are actually all family-owned.
Yeah.
You know, the size doesn't matter. You just look at the members. Sometimes
right.
It's three or four families that have come together. And what's also really fabulous is that you have children that are interested, because sometimes rural life isn't as exciting as a big city to kids. So if you've got a child that wants to come back and join you and maintain your family farm, I think it's God's blessing.
Who gets your milk?
We sent to Dairy Farmers of America.
Okay.
So that's how I got to work with Project Milk and get the whole milk powder to Peru through them. And they're very excited to be our partner.
As long as you mention that, let's talk about that for a little bit. Number one, the Diocese of La Crosse for many years has had an orphanage in Peru, outside of Lima. Father Joseph Walieski, who got it going, through the grace of God, may someday be made a saint, and deservedly so. He started there one night. He had gone to Bolivia. He had built a church there. He moved to Peru to do missionary work. He saw these little kids sleeping in alleys with newspapers over them to keep warm. And he said, I got to do something. And he built an orphanage. Pope John Paul II got wind of it during a visit. He saw him and spoke Polish to Father Walieski and back and forth. Gave him some seed money to get that going. So it's Casa Hogar Juan Pablo II. And we talked to them frequently. They have been doing this for years now. When Father Walieski passed away, some of his original orphans, who are now post-middle-aged, helped carry his casket. You know, this was stuff that was just like, one guy with a vision, and look what happened. But one thing that's been going on is that they need milk. They need food. We ask for donations all the time to help keep them going. And what you guys do is you get your milk to that company, right? Well, who's the company again now?
So Dairy Farmers, this is a new venture. I think we're in our second year.
Second.
And Dairy Farmers of America provide whole milk powder. Mm-hmm. And we get that through some of the people that work there through DFA, help me and Deacon to organize and get that shipped to Peru.
And Deacon, how much powdered milk gets down to Peru?
A full container is 40,000 pounds.
Okay, back up. 40,000 pounds of powdered milk.
Yes.
I can't imagine. Well, you see those container things on rail cars and getting put into ships. I mean, those are the size of a single wide trailer. I mean, they're big.
Yes.
Now, these kids don't necessarily drink all that milk, do they?
No. No. That milk is distributed even into the jungles.
Yeah.
Well, there's a gentleman that takes it in his boat out into the jungle, days to take it to where it needs to be.
This is the beautiful thing about these stories. It isn't like the 40,000 pounds of milk show up and these kids go, my senior hurts, I can't drink anymore. Drink some more of that milk. We got 40,000 pounds here. No, it doesn't work that way. Monsignor Hirsch and his predecessors, and I'm sure the others there, work with other orphanages, other organizations in Peru. So the goodness that starts right here in our diocese and gets shipped down to Peru. It gets first into the orphanage, and then it spreads out further into Peru, like you say, even into the jungles?
Yes.
To some of these tribes that are there?
Yes.
They see them coming with these little low boats on the river and big bags of powdered milk?
Well, they take them out, you know.
Wow.
I think the really cool thing, too, to think about with this powdered milk with DFA is that it's whole powder. So what better to have full fat for children that are growing and developing their brain size? And they can also make other things with it. They're not just drinking it. They're learning to culture it and make yogurt, which, again, is just a wonderful story. And that's why Dairy Farmers of America was really excited to partner with us, because they just loved that whole international event that ties all of us together.
Yeah.
Food. Yes.
And I just heard, literally driving in here to do this interview with you guys, that the World Food Organization, because of lack of donations and rising prices, has had to cut back on their supplies. They're saying now they can only provide food to perhaps one out of the five people they originally were helping. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you guys and the Diocese of La Crosse are getting this food down there is more important than ever, to have a consistent supply of food for these kids who are growing, but also to making yogurt, huh?
Yes.
I wonder if Monsignor Hirsch will bring any up with him. I don't know if they let him in the country with it or not. What do you got in there? Well, yogurt from Peru. Oh, okay. They might let him in. He'll be coming up probably November, I suspect. He can take some time off, come visit his family, and then also go around to the churches and talk more about Casa Hogar. But this program has been going on for as long as I can remember, about a good 10 years, if not longer.
1984, I believe.
84, that long. Yes.
I think another thing that's really important to share is if someone gets a chance to watch the YouTube video that Noel also orchestrates. What a story. Very emotional. A great thing that others should view.
So just go to YouTube. Probably just type in Casa Hogar. I would hope that would get you onto all the videos. But H-O-G-A-R, Casa, C-A-S-A. And you should get there, yeah. The diocese has put up a lot of stuff on YouTube now. It's just almost amazing. Ordinations and all kinds of stuff and homilies. Just a wealth. They're taking advantage of the media to spread out. So if you want to find out more about the milk program, Casa Hogar, the whole thing. Now, I haven't had a chance to talk to Noel too much yet, but now that we're getting this hookup going, I'll be talking to her not only down there, but also back home as well. So that's been going on for about 39 years, close to 40 years now, the milk program. That's a lot of milk.
Yes. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it started out with a smaller amount and kept getting larger and larger. And at one point, if I remember correctly, talking to you, you said, Deacon, that they were discovering that it cost a certain amount to ship half a container down, but also it didn't cost really any more to ship the full container. So
correct.
That if they could step it up to a full container, they would ship twice as much down for the same price.
Yes, and it's all based on the money that was donated.
Absolutely.
To the diocese here that made that possible. You know, if we don't have the funds, then we're tied to send a half a container.
Exactly.
And we met in January, and I shared with the committee that we were like $30,000 short for a full load. By the next time we met, we had exceeded that, and we were able to send a full container of whole milk down this year, and that was wonderful. Thank God for that.
Now, is that done through the bishop's annual appeal or a separate appeal?
Separate. It's not an appeal. It's just...
Give us some money.
Yeah, well, we go through the PCWs, we go through the schools, mm-hmm. we work through many different venues to reach out and let people know that there is need for funding.
And
every year we're going to be doing this because that container of milk we sent last year is gone this year. August 7th, this container showed up. Next August, next September, that container will be gone, and we'll need to redo this. And we're feeding so many wonderful children down there that it's...
It is kind of startling when you think how much, let's say you give them $100 or whatever you've got, you know, how much good that expands out. I mean, someplace there's some kid either in another orphanage or in a local tribe who wouldn't know Wisconsin from a hole in the ground, you know, they have no idea, feeling better and being healthier and maybe not getting sick, because they're getting milk that started out a few miles from here.
$100 pays for a 50-pound bag.
Really?
So that's That's great.
Yeah, yeah. $100 is a good round number. Well, we've been saying, and again, it's wonderful when you go to a food bank and you bring them some cans of food, right? But we keep reminding them that if you give them the same amount of money, cash, that you would pay for the cans of food you're bringing them, usually they can buy more food than you can give them.
Yes.
And yeah, it's not as cool to go there and hear some food. And it's a nice thing about, especially if you've got kids with you, they can see what's going on. But cash really does expand.
Right.
And so if you can do $100, how do you do, if you want to get in on this for the next year, who do you contact to do that?
We usually put out a notice in the Chancery Bulletin that goes out to all the parishes in the diocese, and they in turn put it into their bulletins. So I would say watch your church bulletin, and that the information should be coming forth from there. Or just send a check to the La Crosse Diocese, Project Milk, and it gets
it'll
to
get
the
there
right
correctly.
Place.
And, and you, of course, can contact me whenever the prime time is to do a public service announcement, and I can get it on the air as well. That's neat, Project Milk. The other project that I touched my heart when I first heard about it was Project Seed. Who wants to describe what that is all about?
Well, it started 27 years ago.
Okay.
There again, another long, long history. You know, it was a farmer that wanted to develop seed locally and be able to sell that seed locally. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what he did. It's owned in Onalaska, Wisconsin. The seed is grown mostly in La Crosse County or other counties in Wisconsin. And they have cut out a lot of their expenses to be able to sell that seed at a very reduced price. You know, they don't have the salespeople. The owners take the orders. They deliver it. We set up locations where they take the seed to in Richland Center, Colby. There's different locations in the spring that they deliver that seed to. So it cuts out a lot of expense. And if there is a large order, they will deliver, you know, pallets of seed to farmers.
So basically, once again, you know, I'm sure just like everybody else who's even going to the grocery store, farmers everywhere, every time they turn around, something has gotten more expensive. And did I hear correctly that because of the drought, bales of hay have increased in price dramatically? Am I hearing that correctly?
Right. Yeah, went way up in price. And even like the traditional seed prices over the last years have garnered a much bigger price tag.
Any idea how much the bale of hay costs? I wouldn't know. You know, I mean, I heard some numbers on the radio, but I was in the car and I didn't really catch it. But it sounded like, you know, like five times more than it used to be because there isn't much out there right now.
Right. So dry.
Yeah. So,
and, so is that a square deal or is that a round deal?
I think it was a round one. Yeah. A square deal, a round one. Yeah. You see, the joke goes right over Jack's head, the city kid. Ah, there it goes. Yeah. But yeah, you get hit with stuff like that you just don't expect.
And I think one other thing that we did different this year, trying to tie together Project Milk with Project Seed, is that we took just small $2 a bag and had that go towards Project Milk as well, trying to mesh those two together a little bit.
So it multiplies. You're helping
correct.
Out a farmer by selling them seed at a much lower price than stuck in the retail wholesale marketing thing. And then a couple bucks from that goes to help get the milk to go to Peru. You guys are pretty smart figuring these things out.
So 2,000 bags is what they kind of sold. So 2,000 times $2 is
it's a nice
start.
You guys are really, and this stuff's been going on forever. And the average person, if you were to walk down the streets of La Crosse or Pittsville or Colby or any place, and you say, what's Project Seed? Especially if they weren't Catholic, they'd have absolutely no idea what's going
on.
That's
correct.
And Project Milk, they probably even go, huh? You know, they just don't know because it's not really in their world.
Right.
But the fact that we're doing this, and again, to mimic what Roberto Partaru says about Catholic charities, we're not doing this for Catholics. We're doing this because we're Catholic. You know, these people in the jungle in Peru, I don't know what their belief system is. That's not the point. The point is they're hungry.
We're helping them.
And the farmer who's being helped with seed, you don't have to ask for his Catholic identity card before you'll sell him, you know, the seed. Do you need some seed? Yes. You know, and if I'm not mistaken, from years ago, there was somebody really in a crunch. You might give them a little extra seed.
Well, what we do, we have a hardship case. If they will send us a letter explaining their hardship, we will, as a committee, look at it, and we will sell them the seed for half price. We'll cover, the committee will cover half the price of the seed. Mm-hmm. So we help out the farmers in desperate need, and we want them to continue so that next year they can take care of themselves, you know, rather.
It's just like every April 15th during the power cutoffs when Catholic Charities talks to folks who, through really no fault of their own, they haven't been able to keep up with the power bills because you didn't have to pay it during the winter. And next thing you know, it's an $800 bill and they're going to get it cut off. And, you know, they help out a little bit. They don't do the whole thing, but they help out enough and they can do. They're very big about training people to do a budget, to look at what they spend and where you can save money. My wife and I do that all the time now. You know, how many online subscriptions to newspapers do we really read? You know, whoop, bye-bye.
I think another thing that's really important on Project Milk, especially when you're giving to people, mm-hmm. Is not to be giving to administrative funds.
Yeah.
What they're giving is truly a bag of milk. Participating in that gift to those children, mm-hmm. because that's what 100% of the dollars go to. And we have to put a plug in that our collection that's taken up on Rural Life Celebration Wednesday goes towards Project Milk as well.
Okay, so when they pass the plate on Wednesday in Marshfield at the farm,
at the Mass, yes,
all that money goes to Project Milk. So if you really wanted to like drop a little check in the plate that maybe later on when they're stacking up the donations and looking at the check, they go, oh, wow.
Please do.
Yeah. Please do. Yeah.
We'd be very happy.
We'd be very happy.
We'll invite you back next year, too.
Yeah. Give you a nice little chair right next to the bishop. But the thing is also that, and I've seen this on the show, talking to all these different agencies, whether it be, the social concerns or catechesis, the Diocese of La Crosse, people involved doing the work, and I don't just mean the staff here, I mean everybody, you guys, everybody, they're very conscious of the fact that they're not using their money, they're using money that has been donated, collection plate money. I can't tell you how many times, I still get emails at home forwarded to me, person going, I'm going up to Marshfield, I got a box of books for the school there, anybody go in that direction so I don't have to ship them? That's the kind of thinking that goes on. And we're not blowing money left and right. You know, we just really are not. It is amazing, and I will credit our communications department and our technical folks, both of them, not our staff of 100, that we have been able to live stream masses and do all these things we haven't been able to do before at very, very little investment in equipment. Partly because the equipment has gotten cheaper. You can do a lot of stuff with a lot less. But also, they just are very aware of how to make good use of it. And, years ago, they asked me, 10, 15 years ago now, what's a good wireless microphone? Because I've been in radio for a long time. And I told them, well, you know, there's a Sennheiser, but back then it was like $499. And they did get one. And I was astounded. We tried it out in the halls here. They had the receiver at one end of the hall, and I'm way down the other end. And I stuck this little thing on my lapel and began talking, and they played back the recording. And it was like it was in a studio. Now, that's a lot of money. And, you know, I have not bought one myself. But they've been using it for 15 years. You know, at all these services, at all these ordinations, every time the bishop is speaking, every time he does a video. So when you divide that $500 by 15 years, and well, the quality of it is so good, you know, it's just amazing. It really is. And you guys do the same thing. You guys are always cost cutting. Anybody who's in farming, I can't imagine, what is the biggest, I'm just curious, because I'm really ignorant on this stuff. In the past, say, 10 years or so, has there been any big innovation in farming that has saved money? I mean, are you satellite stuff or anything like that?
Oh, you could go on and on. There's so much technology. Just I think one thing that I always think about on our farm is people talk about sustainability. and just that we're carbon sequesters. We gather carbon. We're really, really good recyclers. Just on our dairy alone, we use Winona Corona beer. We use the malt sprouts from that. We feed those to our cows. All the cheese factories, Westby, could be Arena, the whey, we use that to feed our cows. Your Cheerios from Cedar Rapids, we feed those to our cows, the oat hulls. So we're really good upcyclers. Plastic, you see that plastic sometimes, which is not so great. We gather that. We have special dumpsters that goes back and is reused to make plastic bottles. Hmm. Something that Dairy Farmers of America is working on right now is they're using whey, and they're trying to also make the plastic water bottle out of the extra whey. So can you imagine wonderful use of whey?
There was just something, I was listening to a public radio station from Wisconsin on the way in, and there is a big cheese event going on in Wisconsin.
Yes, there is.
And somebody called up and they said, in that little fairy tale poem about little Miss Muffet and her Tuffet eating her curds and whey, they said, did she really eat the whey? And these guys who were experts on it said, well, back in the time of, you know, that would take place, no food was wasted. They would find things to make out of the whey. It didn't mean she was just drinking the whey, you know. So I was thinking just now, it's very contemporary to what we're talking about.
Right.
Back then, they didn't waste anything because they couldn't afford to. Today, we can't waste anything because we can't afford to.
Can't afford to. No.
So, Deacon, what other duties do you have in addition to doing this? Where do you serve now?
I serve at St. Teresa of Calcutta in West Salem. Mm-hmm. I'm the chaplain for the Catholic Daughters. And then also the liaison for the rural life. So those three duties keep me more than busy.
What's your week like? I mean, what days do you do? Where do you go? You say, I don't know. I'm everywhere, right? But
well, I, as my wife would say, you think you're off on Monday and Tuesday, but I still get phone calls. I still do visits for people that are dying. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I'm at the church. And, getting ready for the liturgies in the weekend, doing home visits, doing communion services at nursing homes, just visiting, taking care of people, mm-hmm. answering God's call, you know.
And again, if we had talked to you 15 years ago or whatever, when you were doing radio sales and said that all these years later you'd be doing this, would you have believed us?
No. You know, but I look back in what I prayed for and what I asked for, God was already lining me up for the job that I'm doing now. You know, I just didn't know it, you know.
You seem extremely happy doing this.
Oh, I love it. You know, I just thank God every day for calling me to do what He's has me do, you know.
How long is the Deacon Formation Program? How long did you have to study and all that?
5 years.
5 years.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. And I drove 31,000 miles, I figured, when going to class, which was a marathon at that time. So every once a month, for 11 months out of the year, we'd go the marathon. And so that 300-mile trip turned into 31,000 miles in a year's time. But, you know, that first weekend, we came back and I go, oh, boy, what did I get into? And it just, every week, every month, went back and just enjoyed it more and got deeper. And,
I swear you look younger than you did when I saw you first 15 years ago. Must be a good life you're living. I don't know.
Well, when you answer God's call, you know, that's what happens, Jack.
And I will mention this story for Anne Marie's benefit because she's the only person in the listening audience who hasn't heard it. I was in regular broadcast commercial radio since 1980, and I worked for some pretty good-sized stations after my first learning stations like Marshfield and Menominee. And I was down in San Antonio, Texas in 87 when the Pope came for an outdoor mass. And I wasn't Catholic at the time. My boss, who was Catholic and had been a Catholic missionary, was scared to death because this station I worked for had a very powerful transmitter. And also was, for what you would think, the most prestigious station in the city, also the most profitable. And it was the only one that they allowed to have a microphone up when the Pope was going to talk, and it would get broadcast to us, and we'd give it to all the other stations. He was scared to death. But anyway, I wasn't Catholic. I don't care. I mean, we had to all go out there the day of the, you know, the Mass, 500,000 people outdoors, you know. And my little transmitter, little walkie-talkie thing, you know, oh, we're here at the thing here, and there's a bunch of people here, and they're spraying water on them because it's real hot, you know, that kind of thing. I don't care. Pope Mobile goes by, and I had no expectation to see the Pope. I didn't care. I didn't care. I was interesting, but, you know, Pope Mobile goes by, little glass-in thing, and you could see him in there waving. I suddenly felt great. It was like a wave hit me, and I just felt, boy, do I feel good. And it's unlike, you know, the people, I can't wait to see the Pope, can't wait to see the Pope. Here he is there. No, with me, it was like, oh, here he comes. You know? And a little later on, I looked down on the ground, and there's 500,000 people there. And in the sand, because it was sandy out there, little tiny golden cross on a little miniature Mexican blanket had fallen off somebody. And I looked around. I mean, there's 500,000 people. I stuck it in my shirt pocket. And if I had said in 87 that, you know, quite a few years later, you'd be running a Catholic radio station, and this little cross would be framed in your office, I would have said, just like you, you're out of your mind. But yeah, and frankly, I've been doing this now for 10 years. This is much more fun than playing the hits or doing controversial talk radio. You know, what do you think about, fill in the blank, you know. We used to have a guy who did a show that was called the Call of the Riled, as opposed to the Call of the Wild. And, you know, it was specifically to give people a call up and complain about stuff. But what purpose is that when you can be talking about how something that people are doing right here locally is helping little kids in Peru? Yes. And little kids in you know, little tribes who never have heard of us. Or you got a farmer who just is not going to make it unless he gets some help and getting some seed at a reasonable price so he can plant for next year.
Yes.
That whole process, I mean, the idea that, and you have to clarify me on this one, farmer goes to the bank to borrow money to buy seed, to plant it, and buy fertilizer and all that stuff, has to go through all the work, maintain all the machinery, and then has to hope, pray, that the weather treats him right. If it does, everybody's got so much of it, the price tends to get a little soft.
That's correct.
If it doesn't work out, as it's probably doing now, the price goes up, but maybe no one has enough of it. Yeah. It's got to be that delicate razor's edge that has to be balanced. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Now, there are price supports. I don't know how that works, how that helps out, whether it's enough. Couldn't tell you. But you probably had years like that.
Oh, many times.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think some people take up, you know, they have crop insurance that help in some of those cases. And some people don't participate in those programs.
Yeah.
But it is. It's very stressful. And
yeah.
I think if you don't have the power of God and pray, you can get very stressed out. And I think, as you mentioned, that there's times where you need to seek counseling because it is very, very stressful.
There were farmers up in, again, central Wisconsin, again, we're talking at least 30 years ago, who were protesting the low price of milk. It was so low, they weren't even getting their money out of it. They said, it's cheaper for us just to dump it in the ditch. And they were doing that, you know. I mean, and you sit there heartbroken because, and I saw, again, my in-laws were in this category. I saw them work so hard. And again, before I was around, when they were raising their kids and getting them ready for college, you know, they would save and scrimp and not buy stuff and do without to buy a car for their son to drive to Iowa to go to college. But then they would give him the new car and they would still keep the old car because they wanted to make sure he could get there.
Get there, sure.
You know, and you see the sacrifice.
I think that was one of the big things during the pandemic that, especially my clients, it bothers them a lot when their product has to be wasted. You could give it away, but when you have to throw it away, it's painful. And during that time when the pandemic hit, there were a lot of farmers that had no place to put their milk. They had to be dumped. It wasn't paid for. You lost money. That heightened the awareness of how all of us feel and how we have to, you know, stick together, make sure we team up and talk with each other and support each other.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it would be kind of like in my world, you know, I'm recording this show and getting it all nice and then erasing it. What would be the point? You know, you said that, and because not only for my work, but no one would get to hear it.
Right.
And to think that you've just slaved over all this milk, which can feed people, make people happy. There are people, you know, again, something I heard on the radio even today, that there's something between 20,000 and 40,000 single moms in Wisconsin who are food insecure. You know, there's a massive need for food, massive need all over the world right now.
Right.
And here we are producing it, and the logistics of getting it out.
Right.
Fortunately, this country's pretty good with that. We have a fantastic system of getting from point A to point B. A lot of countries, including the former Soviet Union, they could never figure it out.
Yeah. I think that was the part of the pandemic that a lot of people didn't understand, is why there was no product on the shelf.
Yeah.
Is just changing your mentality. You could take like Grande Cheese, who sells to three big pizzerias across the country, say in New York City. But they make bulk cheese. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, no one's going to the restaurant. What do you do with all your milk? Those people were hit the hardest because there was no place to sell it. And you couldn't all of a sudden just package it and sell it in to the consumer in the store because there was no packaging material.
Yeah.
You can't flip things around. So those were very painful times for people.
I can just imagine you're all getting ready for your big contract to sell to a fictional pizza, Mr. Pizza, the big right. chain, right? And then boom, oh, we don't want it after all.
Right.
What do we do with it? You know, and you can't tap into the government like the cheese program
no.
and suddenly give it to the government and they'll take care of it. They don't have the packaging material.
No.
Everything is a little more complicated than most people think.
Very much so.
And delicate. We are on a very delicate balance between big time success and
right.
and a lot of it's just mediocre, but in the meantime. But we do what we can and we watch this go on. I think also what... Can one of you talk, since you're both farm people, the kids who grew up on the farm, I know in my wife's case, she was helping out practically before she could even walk, you know, when she was old enough to be somewhat cognizant of being careful. She was in the back of one of these machines that was harvesting something to make sure it wasn't getting clogged or to notify them if it was getting stuck. And, you know, she's pretty little at the time, not dangerous little, but she was young enough to be more responsible than I would have been at that time. And at what age do the kids start really working on the farm and really helping out or really becoming aware of being part of that kind of a communal family?
Really, you know, like in our dairy and all the other dairies that I've worked for, at one time I had over 100 dairy farms that I worked for, but as life changes, that shrinks. But I think the child, if they're born and raised on that dairy, on that beef farm, most of the time they're coming from day one, and as soon as they can hold a pencil or put a string on a gate or tie something, you know, where they're safe, which, you know, is a big ordeal,
mm-hmm.
I think that they're allowed to participate in even the smallest facet. But most of the time I see these kids coming out, getting dirty, spending time with mom and dad a lot.
Yeah, and that's not so bad.
It's great.
Yeah, no,
it's great.
It's very nice. You know, not having dad at the office or at work or doing
yes.
whatever, and maybe seeing him at dinner briefly.
Right.
That kind of thing. You're seeing what's going on.
Yeah,
how many kids?
I've seen pictures of women driving combines with a child on their back and two on their side in the combine.
Right.
She has the family with her.
Yeah.
And that child, it's not working, but they're experiencing farm life.
Yeah.
And that, and then you see smiles on their face. They're enjoying, you know, that.
One of my wife's brothers was somewhat clever mechanically. And I don't know what he did precisely, but he took a piece of farm equipment that was being disused and he managed to convert it to do something else.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of like, holy crow. You know.
Farmers are very good at that.
Yeah, yeah. And they have stories, you know, I mean, about how, you know, this is years and years and years ago, of course, now. But where, you know, they would buy a Model T Ford. And one of the features of it was you could put it up on a jack or something and take one of the wheels off. And it was a power takeoff to power pieces of farm equipment. I mean, this
wow.
is like, Okay. Yeah. It's a strange long history, and but some things, the technology changes, but you guys still get up in the morning, you work hard, go to bed tired, do it again.
Right, and I think we love it. And I was just thinking about that yesterday, Labor Day. What does Labor Day mean to farmers? We're in the field chopping, and I'm working, and my helper there. If it was Labor Day and we didn't have anything to do, we'd probably be very bored. We wouldn't know what to do, you know? So Labor Day was a work day.
Yeah, we talked a little bit last week for the Labor Day show about how thanking everybody that you see on Labor Day when you go to the gas station to get gas, not only thank the person who's, you know, taking your money, but think about the person who hauled the gas to put in the ground that you are now pumping into your car. Yes. And how you go to the food stores and they're all well stocked.
Right.
People, it doesn't happen automatically. We don't have robots to do that yet. You know, we may have self-checkout, which some of us are still struggling with. But, you know, there's an awful lot. Everything we do, there's someone has to do it to get it going. And every time you have pour a little cream in your coffee or whatever the case may be, you go to the store and you buy something. One of the things I heard in a debate years ago, you know, this was between the farm industry and the people in the city going back and forth. Someone said, if you're criticizing what farmers do, don't talk with your mouth full.
Right. Or the cotton on your back or the shoes on your feet.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. We have more food in this country than you can possibly imagine. It's almost with exception, even in the worst of the pandemic, it was always something to eat.
Correct.
Always. And, you know, we don't get to thank Jack for that because he didn't do it. We get to thank people like the average farmer working there every day during the pandemic, getting this stuff out, trying to figure out how to get it from point A to point B. Believe it or not, we have kind of covered a lot of stuff today. Deacon, any further things you want to talk about before we close up here?
Well, one of the things we'll be doing on Wednesday at the Rural Life Day is we'll be presenting St. Isidore to our next year's farm, and that's going to be the Schmitz from down in Richland Center. So they'll be taking St. Isidore from Marshfield, taking it down to Richland Center. So St. Isidore kind of travels each year to where the farm is that we're going to be celebrating with. So,
and then for those who don't know, St. Isidore is the patron saint of
farmers.
Farmers.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, that's really wonderful.
Yes.
Maybe someday we'll have St. Walieski. It could be. Anne-Marie, any final comments you'd like to make?
I guess one of the things that we didn't touch on, and especially in 2018, my family hosted a Rural Life Day, which was an eye-opener for me because that was my first exposure. But we didn't touch on that Ken is a master cheesemaker and has his own Nasonville dairy. So he has a cheese store in town, a cheese store right outside with his factory. So something that people might want to go to and do a little shopping after they've attended the Rural Life Day.
What is the name of the shop?
Nasonville Dairy. Nason.
The reason I mentioned that, again, I was listening to some show about the cheese events going on, and they said that it's 10 years to become a master cheesemaker.
It is.
This is not
and
something...
And this is in Wisconsin. Other states aren't as rigid. We are much more rigid.
Well, Wisconsin's got some
great
standards.
Cheese.
Yeah, they got standards to maintain. Right. That's the trick. Okay, so Nasonville Dairy and master cheesemaker, 10 years to become one.
Right.
You've got to know a lot of stuff. That'd be a whole different topic for another week, I'll tell you.
And I think the other thing that people should know is if they put that address in to GPS to get there, it might tell them they're going to Chile, Wisconsin, and not to Marshfield. That is the correct address.
Really?
In case they get thinking they're headed the wrong direction.
Yeah. You can't miss Marshfield.
All roads lead to Marshfield,
just,
right?
Just about. Just about. I have not been up for a few months now, but boy, that little town has grown. It is big now. Mm-hmm. And we used to live in Spencer.
Oh, sorry.
And when I was a young disc jockey, my second job, you know, not much money, I had an apartment in the Spencer Bank building, which is now like luxury condos or something. I mean, they've really dolled it up. I mean, it was kind of like, wow, it's neat. So we'll look forward to more news from you guys. Again, if anything goes on, something coming up, especially when you are out saying it's time to get some money going. You got to drop me a note so I can put something on the air about it. And same with your end. You got things going. Okay. Just, I'll give you my email address. You just send me a note, okay? Well, thank you both for being here. And
thank you for
having a wonderful
us.
September 13th.
It was
fun to do. I always love hearing about it. We'll talk to you both again, okay?
Okay.
Thank you,
Jack.
Monday, September 11th, is the anniversary of the attacks on the World Trade Center and also on the Pentagon, and a failed attempt that ended in the plane crashing before it reached its target due to the heroism of many of the passengers on board, whose names we'll never know who was directly responsible. We need to remember that not only did almost 3,000 people die in that one event at the World Trade Center, but emergency personnel and first responders going into the rubble of that building have also suffered over the years due to the things they were breathing in and all of the consequences of being in that situation. And, of course, the family members of the lost who were seen posting little pictures of them on walls saying, "Have you seen my husband or my dad?" Just an awful, awful time. We also need to remember that the course of many Americans' lives changed as we mobilized to try to find out who did this and to punish them. Like so many things, this led to a much larger extended conflict that has taken its own toll on our service personnel, both from being wounded or killed and also suffering post-traumatic stress from all the horror that they saw. So 9/11 has been a very big event for everyone directly and indirectly involved. For those of you who were not yet born when this happened, and this is only something you see in a history book or something on YouTube, please understand that for a lot of people, this is going to be a very special day. And for a lot of people, you may not even realize that their lives had changed completely because of the events of 9/11. Please say a prayer for the living, the dead, the survivors, the spouses and loved ones, the responders, the military, and all the people who directly or again indirectly found their lives changed by the events that we will be noting again on Monday. My name is Jack Socha. I'll see you again next week. Thanks for listening to Connecting the Diocese.